When you think about Oregon closing its only coal-burning power plant in a few years and adopting legislation to get no more power from coal from anywhere in 14 years and probably growing in population, you'd think there'd be a need for new facilities to generate electricity, and that's not necessarily true. Conservation looms large in how the Northwest uses electricity and takes a central role in the latest plan from the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. This is the seventh such plan from the NPCC, which used to be the NPPC from the Northwest Power Planning Council. See, conservation is even part of its name now. Ton Ekman is the Power Division Director at the NPCC and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Tom, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
So let's talk about the history here, because it's been 33 years since the first plan from the council. Why does it exist in the first place?
Well, back in the late 1970s, there was a bit of a consternation in the power planning world in the Northwest. We had, based on utility forecast, decided to develop a fair number of new coal and nuclear plants, and the load growth didn't materialize. And there were significant cost overruns for those, particularly the nuclear plants. And it left the region with a pretty big debt burden for plants that didn't operate. And the Northwest utilities, environmental groups, fish and wildlife agencies, and tribes all went back to Congress and said we need to get a better handle on what the utilities are doing, and worked with Congress to develop the Northwest Power and Conservation Act that saw to establish a regional body, the Northwest Council, to oversee basically the development of a load forecast and a power plan based on what they called at the time least cost planning principles. That is, we're searching for the least cost resource development path that has environmental stewardship embedded in it. And the most progressive part of that particular statute enumerated energy efficiency or conservation as a resource that could be purchased by utilities in lieu of developing new generation.
So the NPCC's job basically is just to look ahead to the future and try to figure out what the demand is going to be and then try to match that with supply.
That's right. That's right. And we have a series of priorities under the statute, which basically stated that energy efficiency was the first thing to look for, renewables the second, conventional generation down on listed as fourth, and high efficiency things like cogeneration is the third place. So we have a do the cheapest first and start with energy efficiency.
A lot has changed in the way we both produce and consume electric power in the years since the council was first created. But how different is the customer base over the last 33 years?
I think most significantly, it should come as no surprise to your listeners that the industrial base of the Northwest has transitioned from pretty much resource-intensive, resource-extractive industries to much more service-oriented or high-tech. And so we've seen large pulp and paper mills and lumber and wood products diminish and Intel and its like grow. And we've also seen the reduction in what was the electroprocess industry, the aluminum smelters in the Northwest. They were the principal largest consumer of electricity in the region as a group. And they pretty much all disappeared, save for one that's sort of mothballed at the moment. So they've gone from roughly 10% of the region's load to less than 1% now.
So if you had the big industries like the aluminum smelter still online, this would be a very different story we'd be talking about today, wouldn't it?
We certainly would have significantly different options for meeting load growth. Those smelters were not growing. We had a fixed amount of contract available for them to supply, and so their loads had not been growing. They'd been diminishing. So the principal difference that we have to look at now without them is that they were allowed us to turn portions of their systems on and off, and we used them for what now we refer to as demand response, but we don't have them to go to anymore, so now we're searching for other industries and commercial operations that can help us supply demand going forward by turning off power and being compensated for turning it off when they don't need it.
So as I look at the all the charts and graphs in this power plan that was just ratified last month, is it true that demand is actually less now than it was 16 years ago?
That's right.
Wow. Yeah. Total electric power demand is less in the Northwest.
That's right. And, you know, consumption per capita has gone down. Consumption per industrial customer has gone down. Some of that's basically, as I said earlier, is a transition from the resource extractive to more high-tech and service industries. But we've managed to meet most load growth since 2005 with energy efficiency without adding new generation except to replace some of those that had already been been scheduled for retirement.
We're talking power needs and meeting those needs in the Northwest with Tom Ekman, who's the Power Division Director at the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, or NPCC. You can join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760, for your questions and comments. Your emails can go to jx@jeffnet.org. How much generating capacity, if any, has been added over the last 16 years or so?
Well, there's been a significant amount of renewables added, in particular wind. That's probably the largest single source of generation added. I think the last 10 years, at least, we've added something on the order of almost 9,000 megawatts of capacity that produces maybe 2,500 megawatts of annual energy, which is a pretty significant chunk. There's been some natural gas generation added as well, but not nearly in the magnitude that we've seen the renewables in the form of wind.
Well, the region is certainly growing, though, and so, I mean, you have to figure in, you know, with population growth, I would assume, anyway, there'd be a growth in demand for electricity. That may not necessarily be true, though.
No, I think we've seen, you know, basically flat loads for over a decade, and part of that's because we've done energy efficiency, and part of that's because the industrial base underneath this is changing so that there's been less demand on as the industry has transitioned away from electric technologies. But still, no, when you look at what the load growth has been and what we've accomplished for energy efficiency, the region would have had to been growing in excess of 1.5% over the last decade to offset the amount of energy efficiency we did.
When we talk about the Northwest in terms of what is covered by the plans of the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, Oregon and Washington and Idaho and anything else?
Western Montana, west of the Continental Divide, everything that's in basically the Columbia River drainage.
Okay, so just draw a square around that general part of the region. There we go.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, a couple calls here. Let's go to Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tom Ekman from the Northwest Power and Conservation Council.
Good morning, Tom. Just as soon as I asked my question to the screener, you answered it. I'll rephrase it a little bit, and I've got a couple of comments. The question has to do with how much of the flatlining has to do with conservation, and how much of it has to do with the demise of the aluminum industry and other other heavy industrial consumers. The comments I've got: I built a house on my own, and really thought I was going to use all kinds of high tech solutions to solve problems and go solar and all of this. And I wound up finding the most bang for my buck was still conservation insulation all the way around. So general comment there. And then finally, where is solar going to fit into this and other alternative energy sources in terms of replacing petrochemicals and fossil fuels? I'll take my answers off the air.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate that. Tom, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think his finding with respect to building the house and going to insulation first was the same solution that we found at the regional level, that energy efficiency by far is the most economical solution or resource choice to meet load growth going forward. Renewables, unfortunately, still are pretty expensive. And more importantly, because of where we are in the world, they're a little more variable than we'd like, and particularly in the winter. And so the place in the renewables in the statute is number two, but in terms of economics and fitting with the current supply system that we have, they fall a little bit lower in the pecking order, and we see highly efficient natural gas coming in front of them in terms of economics and the suitability to match with loads, because we can turn on a natural gas turbine anytime, but we have to wait for the sun to shine and the wind to blow to do it otherwise. So there's a mismatch between our need for power and when we need it and how variable the other resources, renewable resources we currently have are. That's why we found them to be less a cornerstone of the plan than we did we might have had they been more reliable.
Another call here from Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tom Ekman from the Northwest Power and Conservation Council.
Howdy. Except for geothermal and hydro, just about all your renewable energy is going to be depending on batteries, and we haven't got them. How far away are we, or do you know, from getting some kind of a system that will actually store the energy when it's being made and use the energy when it's being needed?
All right. Thanks for that, Steve.
Well, I wish I knew I'd put a big bet down on it.
Right.
I don't think anyone has the real answer to that. There is a lot of effort and a lot of growth in battery storage and technology development, but it's at least more than a decade away that we see in terms of the kinds of storage this region needs. If you go to Florida or California, where the sun pretty much is there available every day, you can deal with the kind of batteries that are being developed today, which have a 4 to 6 hour kind of carrying capability. What this region needs is something that can carry from 4 to 6 months, from summer to winter and through winter. And we're a long way from anything that looks anything approaching that kind of a technology where we have long-duration storage. So that's a problem. We need to find technologies like wave or geothermal that can provide renewable energy year-round, and I think that's the key to us more than storage. Storage will help us a lot, but we need to find more consistent output, particularly in the winter.
I have to believe that this plan includes the long-anticipated shutdown of the Boardman coal plant from Portland General Electric in the year 2020. That's still scheduled to happen. So how big a difference does that make, and how much does it create the need to find additional electrical generating sources for the Northwest?
Well, basically, we have not only the Boardman plant, but there's a plant up in Washington State, Centralia, that has two units up there that one will shut down in the same time as Boardman and then another one 5 years later. There's also one in northern Nevada that will shut down. So we're facing the removal of three coal plants across the region that serve the current power system. And it looked like from our analysis, pretty much under 90% of the futures that we tested, most load growth could be met with energy efficiency under those cases through 2030, and the replacement power largely would be coming from using the existing natural gas generation that we have in the region that right now sits idle about half the time. So we just refire those more consistent output to replace the coal that's retiring. That seems to be the most economical choice.
Now, while the Northwest Power and Conservation Council was adopting this seventh plan and the Oregon legislature was going about its business with trying to remove the use of all electricity from coal-fired plants by the year 2030, was that factored in here, or does that require a revision of sorts?
Doesn't require any revision. We did take a look at expanding the renewable portfolio standards in the region and retiring coal plants and or imposing a cost on carbon, all that were politically options out there to look at. And, you know, our plan didn't look at, identify that development of renewables as a significant, most economical way to reduce the carbon. We saw basically conversion to a higher efficiency gas system and building more renewables towards the end of the portfolio resource period, 20 years out, as pretty much the basic answer to get you the carbon out of the system. If you can't retire the coal plants, which is part of the bill that was passed in the state legislature, hoping that we can, if by not taking that coal, that those plants will retire, there is considerable debate whether that's going to, in fact, be true. But if it is, that will work well. What you need to have, they are the principal carbon generators in the power system. The coal plants that we have push about 85% of the carbon into the system, and they only produce about around 10% of the total power.
Okay, another call here from John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tom Ekman from the NPCC.
Hi, I have a quick comment that'll probably elicit a question first. Pumped storage. I don't know why I don't hear more about pumped storage, because it could use the existing hydro. But my question is, with the decrease in the use of electricity, the utilities are not getting as much money in, and it used to be that your bill, electric rate, you paid zero if you used zero, and your use subsidized or paid for the whole grid system. And utilities are increasingly going to a higher base charge in order to pay for their systems and generate more of a steady income. EWEB, where I am, which is kind of conservation-oriented, has about the highest base charge of any utility that I could find. So my question is, if we keep raising the base fee instead of letting power consumption pay for the infrastructure, we discourage conservation. My personal bill is more than half base fee and less than half consumption.
All right, let's take it up from there. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. Tom, thoughts?
Yeah, I'll take pump storage first and then a little more extensive comment on the bill structure. I think the pump storage that we've looked at was really, really expensive, and one of its principal problems is it takes something like 8 to 10 years to get one permitted and constructed, and it's not clear that some competing technology for meeting peak demands, which is largely what pump storage does, might come along and displace it. And in particular, we've seen demand response, as I was talking about earlier, in commercial and industrial facilities be much more competitive with respect to meeting peak demands instead of building a big infrastructure like you would with pump storage. So it's just an economics choice. Where you have it and the impoundment is already there, it might be less expensive than some options, but none of those look to be less expensive than demand response.
It's sending water uphill to have it run down again?
Yeah, you always lose a little bit in that process. Without an existing impoundment, it's a long lead time to get that infrastructure in place.
Okay.
So the places we looked didn't look particularly attractive. On the bills and rates, we have an industry, the electric power industry is largely in this region, a lot of fixed costs to pay for power, power lines, poles, wires, substations, and the generators out there. And because we're so blessed with hydro, it doesn't have a lot of fuel associated with it. Even most generators today are they're fuel intensive when we add new ones, but the existing base is about half hydro, which has hardly any variable cost, and building all the renewables, basically the same situation. So we have a huge fixed cost to recover, and as loads don't grow, as the gentleman said, we still got to recover the fixed cost, but we can't recover it out of increased sales anymore. So there's a definite tension between how we structure our revenue collection mechanism and how we have to price the power to recover those. Eugene definitely has increased its fixed cost. We have many utilities doing that so that they can cover rather than selling it in a kilowatt-hour charge, recover it in a monthly fixed fee because they have to pay those fixed costs. And there's probably not a great solution around that without, I think we're seeing some movement to something like the cell phone industry where you pay a fixed fee for your service per month and because 80% of the cost is fixed and only 20% of the cost is variable. And so we may see movement in that direction where you get a fixed amount of power and then you pay for minutes or kilowatt hours beyond that or data as you do in some of the plans today. So I think we've got to figure out a way that those revenue collection mechanisms are adjusted to the reality of no load growth. And that's true nationwide.
All right, Tom Ekman is our guest on the Exchange Power Division, Director for the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. Here's a call from Mark in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi, go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. How much electricity could be saved if all new construction switched to tankless water heaters and LED lights as opposed to either compact fluorescence or incandescence?
Well, let's see. I can give you a better estimate of the latter than the former. There's about, right now with current technology, the compact fluorescents use about 13 watts per light bulb for the equivalent of a 60-watt lamp. And the current technologies, the LEDs, use about 9 to 10. So there's about a 30% improvement in lighting potential if we switch to all LEDs. And that's pretty much across the board. It's a minimum 10 and as much as 30. The new technology for LEDs might move that down to half. So we'd see about a 50% improvement. But that's just in the labs at this point in time. The water heating question is another a little more problematic question. Depends on what the consumption of the electric unit was to begin with. We have a new technology called heat pump water heaters that uses less than half of what the standard old resistance tank used. And the tankless units, if you actually talk about total energy, the heat pump water heater uses less total energy than does the tankless gas. If you're talking about electric resistance, we wouldn't save any total energy by moving we'd save considerable total energy by moving to tankless compared to the old resistance tanks. But we have Depends on the technology you're considering as the base case.
How much, Tom, does NPCC advocate for changes? Like, would NPCC advise people to switch from electric water heaters to gas water heaters to reduce some of the load?
We haven't taken a position. We've looked at that particular issue every plan. We direct what we call our direct use of natural gas study, and there are limited opportunities to reduce. To make that fuel switching an economic choice for consumers, and it really varies depending upon your current electric rates and your current gas bill or gas rate. And in some cases, it's highly attractive. In other cases, you're better staying with the electric than to move on to the natural gas. And as I said earlier, the technology that you choose to heat the water with, whether it's a heat pump water heater or a natural gas unit, really determines whether we've actually saved any energy or not.
How much are the decentralized generation facilities for power having an impact on the grid? I mean, how much is rooftop solar helping out in generating electricity that everybody can use?
Yeah, it's not very big yet, but growing quickly. Our best estimate based on the count that we have for solar systems installed in the Northwest, that produces about a little less than 20 average megawatts of savings on the grid out of a system that uses 20,000 average megawatts. So you can see it's not a particularly large impact. We think maybe over the next two decades, with the growth in rooftop solar, community solar, and commercial solar, we might see somewhere around 300 to 500 come online that would diminish that. And the Northwest is unfortunately not blessed with a lot of solar energy in the winter, and so it's a pretty low impact. If we get into Idaho, it's a wholly different story.
Right. Every time you get east of the mountains, it's a different kind of thing. Okay, yep. Lots to think about for the future. This is what the Northwest Power and Conservation Council put into its seventh plan for meeting energy needs in the Northwest, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and western Montana. You can see the whole report online. Tom Ekman is the Power Division Director for the NPCC, and he's been our guest. Tom, thanks so much.
Thank you.